It's 1:30, so I'll let Crystal get us started.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for joining us. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 1:30. Is there anyone here that would like to make public comments? All right, so hearing none, we will move on to the approval of minutes. We have the July 10th, 2024 Bright Tech meeting minutes that were included in your packet. Before we make a motion, did anyone have any corrections to make to that? Those? All right. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as presented in the packet?
So moved. This is Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Leslie. Thank you, Leslie.
I'm sorry, but I'm having trouble hearing.
Okay, I will speak up. Thank you for letting me know, Becky. Is there any other discussion before we vote about the minutes? All right, hearing no more discussion, we'll move forward with the motion to approve the minutes as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, any opposed? Thank you very much. The minutes have been approved. All right, next up, we wanted to do introductions. We have some new faces in the room and also some of our alternates that are here with us today. So, Paula, would you like to kick us off, please, with introductions?
Sure. I'm Paula Molester. I'm the Director of Transportation at the Central Shenandoah Planning District Commission, working with our Bright Transit Program and our Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Hi everyone, my name is Kyle Trussell. I'm with the Department of Rail and Public Transportation. I'm the Transit Program Manager for CSPDC.
I'm Rodney Rhodes, Director of Community Development for the City of Stanton, and I'm an alternate on this committee.
I'm Darren Smith. I'm the new director at the Stanton Downtown Development Association. There's no alternate so far because right now it's only me.
Hi, my name is Leslie Tate. I'm the Director of Community Development for the City of Waynesboro.
I'm Allison Tombarch. I'm City Planner with Waynesboro.
Alex Wilmer, Assistant Town Manager for the Town of Bridgewater. We have three stops on the BRCC North Route.
Mike Kelly. I am the Dean of Students at Wilson Workforce and Rehabilitation Center and also representing the Virginia Department of Aging and Rehabilitation.
I am Abby Calvert. I'm an educator at Augusta Health, and I am an alternate.
Hi, Amanda Goffman, Assistant City Manager for Stanton.
Jennifer Wetzel, the Deputy County Administrator for Augusta.
Will Thompson, Director of Operations for Virginia Regional Transit.
Terry Rogers, Shenandoah Valley Department of Social Services, and I'm going to have my replacement because I will be leaving. January is probably going to be my last meeting, so I'm going to have my replacement introduce herself.
And I'm Lexi Hav for Social Services.
I'm Josiah Hojum. I'm also with Social Services, and I am the alternate.
I'm Tammy DeBose at Valley Community Services Board. I'm the Director of Admin Services.
I'm Melissa Walker. I'm from Blue Ridge Community College. I'm the Director of Public Safety, and I'm not sure if I'm an alternate or a replacement.
You are replacing
and a replacement. Nice to meet you.
Leroy Sweezy. Operations Manager here at Bright Bus, at Bright Transit, and I'm an alternate.
And I'm the lowest. Becky Messer, I represent the Riders, and live in Stanton.
And I'm Danielle Gannon, I'm a Transit Planner with the CSPDC.
And Devin Thompson, Transit Program Manager at the Central Shenandoah Planning District Commission. So you'll start to see more communications from Danielle, so don't hit ignore on her email. Pretend it says Devin there. All right, thank you. Oh, and we have a few folks on Zoom if you all want to introduce yourselves. We can start with Tyler.
Hey everyone, this is Tyler Bethune. I'm an engineer with Kim Lee Warren. We are part of the team that's assisting CSPDC with the microtransit feasibility study, which we'll be hearing about later in the meeting today.
I'm Zach Beter for Tanya. Oh, go ahead, Zach.
I'll be about a second here. My name is Zach Beard, Program Manager
at the CSPDC in Stanton, Augusta, Waynesboro, MPO, Salt MPO.
And I'm Jared Bertagno. I'm a transportation planner here at the CSPDC and helping staff the Salt MPO as well. And Pudum and Zadie, I think you want to introduce yourselves, part of the Kinley Warren team.
Yes, sorry. Gonna wait for my camera to turn on. Hi, I'm Pudum. I'm also with Kinley Warren, working on the microtransit feasibility study.
Hi, I'm Zadie Lacey, and I'm also on the Kinley Warren team working as a transit planner, and happy to assist on the subgroup.
Perfect. Well, thank you all.
Yes, thank you all for introducing yourselves. And just for those that are new in the room, I'm Crystal Moyers, and I am the Administrative Director of Community Partnerships and Communications at Augusta Health. So thank you guys again for joining us. Next on the agenda, we have a Stanton West North Loop route modification update from Deppin.
Yes, so as you all can remember back at our November meeting, you all voted to go ahead and move forward with adjustments to the Stanton North and West Loops, which has now been renamed Stanton West and North Loops, as well as some changes to the Stanton Downtown Trolley. So in addition to that route changing from one to two half-hour loops to one-hour loop, and then we also added a call stop at Middlebrook Trace. So VRT has told us that the start change, so the hours of operation did shift to 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 7:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. on Saturday. So riders have been very gracious about, or very excited about the hours change. And that has helped with some connections, as Steve had talked about. And then the call stop is getting some pretty consistent usage at Middlebrook Trace Apartments, so we might have to look at making that a fixed stop sooner rather than later. And so then also the Stanton Downtown Trolley picked up some stops of the old North and West Loops, and that just maintained our existing coverage to not take away too much in making that alteration. The developer has been notified about the stop addition, and they have been able to move forward with their projected plans. It sounds like they've given their site plans over to Rodney, is that right? Is that what you said yesterday, or their site plans are moving forward?
Yes, we have reviewed site plans for the first 50 units of that development.
So yes, it sounds like everybody is happy on this change, so no one rioted in the streets. So like Paula had mentioned in the July meeting, this is just our first step into getting service out there, since there is going to be a lot of new development coming online. Mm-hmm. So as it comes online, we'll continue to monitor demand and usage and see if there are any other route modifications that we can make to continue to get more service out there to those apartment complexes.
Thank you for that update, Devin. Any questions for Devin? All right, then we'll move right along. Next, we have the Stanton Lewis Street Hub Rehab operational update from Paula.
I am very excited to say that we are about to sign off on the final completion paperwork this week, making the Stanton Lewis Street Hub Rehabilitation Project officially complete. Dominion was out there last week, put power to the lights. So if you go out there probably 5:45 or later, the lights will automatically turn on, and it is fully operational. We've heard a lot of good feedback from riders when we've been out there doing pop-ups in September, that they really like the new setup, that there's, you know, a lot of seating with the new retaining wall, and then the two shelters being side by side. People feel like they have enough room to wait for the bus comfortably, and I think it just really streamlines operations at that transfer location. So we are very excited, and if you haven't seen it yet, please do drive by at some point and check it out.
Thank you, Paula. Any questions for Paula about St. Louis Street Up? Great. Acton Express update, Danielle, can you provide us with that?
Yes, so this September was the third anniversary of Acton Express, so we had a few pop-up events planned at various stops, which if you remember how rainy September was, many of those were rained out. So they were rescheduled to October, and they were great. Riders were really excited, have great things to say about the service, so that was exciting. We also had a few stop relocations. The Stanton Mall stop is now at Stanton Crossing Park and Ride, the park and ride lot there. And we are working currently with the City of Stanton to implement some solar lighting out there. Also, the Fishersville Park, the park and ride lot, is now at Augusta Health. And yes, yes. And the also, the University of Virginia launched their Wahoo Commute program. So now all UVA affiliates ride the Afton Express for free. And that's all, the rides are subsidized by UVA parking and transportation. So riders have been really grateful for that.
Thank you guys for that great update. Any questions for Danielle? Great. Roy, contractor update?
Right now we're looking at the neighbor bridge stop requests. And
yeah, Danielle's going to cue you up.
Fishersville Community Church has reached out to us about having a stop placed near their church. Because they have a food bank there, a food pantry operates out of there, and they have a lot of passengers, and there's really no real safe location we have to drop passengers off or pick them up. Although we do kind of operate that as a flag down stop in that area, because there's another church about a couple blocks down that also has a food pantry. So we kind of try to help out those passengers as much as we can by operating flag down, but they want a real set bus stop sign. Yeah. You can see it would also service the Food Lion Shopping Center, which is right across the road there. But in that area, there's really limited there's really no sidewalk at all, limited walking space for pedestrians. It's not really pedestrian friendly. And the proposed ideas for the stop would be at the end, midway of their parking lot, before it really turns into gravel. Here's the church right here, and then we'd be this spot right here before this all turns into gravel in there. And it's pretty busy because there's food trucks operating this area also, so this is a pretty busy pedestrian area and traffic area. And that being a high traffic area and an intersection, we try our best as it is to let off passengers and keep within any type of safety parameters. But if not safe, we tend to go through this intersection, let passengers off on the other side. But right now, on the other side of the road there, coming the opposite direction, we have passengers who also went off on the opposite side there, but there's really nowhere we feel that is 100% safe. Mm-hmm. Although we have accommodated some passengers with flagging down because, the food pantry, so they're going there for their needs, and we're trying the best to meet them as best we can. And we've tried to find safe locations, and that secondary dot across the road there is one of those areas that's kind of close to what could be deemed safe enough for us to drop off or pick up passengers. But again, there's no real safe areas around there because it's not really pedestrian friendly, and it is an intersection also. We've suggested possibly if someone was on the opposite side of the road there, they would catch the bus on the church side if they wanted to head back to Waynesboro and ride up to Augusta Health and transfer to the other 250 connector. The 250 connector is the only bus that services this area. But that way, because the 250 connector going to Stanton does come along 10, 15 minutes earlier, so they can go up there, get off somewhere safe, transfer to another bus, and head back, make a 10-minute difference, which would be safe and accommodate everybody at the same time.
So I did want to also ask Jennifer if you knew if there were any ideas of having any crosswalks, if there were any plans to have a crosswalk at that particular location, or?
I haven't heard anything about that location.
Okay.
I think there's discussion of other places in Fishersville, but not
that. Yeah, that is also a busy location because of the apartment complex, housing complex as far as the Windward Drive there. And if we do take employees to that shopping center, we do travel those maybe back and forth. So it's a pretty active location. We try our best. We do try our best to accommodate everybody, but we do suggest for some passengers to simply just ride up to the hospital and ride back. Yeah. On weekends, it's just as busy on weekends. It's actually more busy on weekends with that route, for that stop, for that area, because more people can move around more.
Yes. So you're saying going westbound, you would be able to pull off into that parking lot?
We don't pull off into the parking lot. Okay. We kind of stop before the turn lane. And in some cases, we have stopped in the turn lane. And in some cases, we've stopped after the stop sign. Like we said, the drivers try to judge which is the safest point, because there's no sidewalks area. There's heavy traffic. So each driver tries to judge at that time of day when they do pull in there, where's the safest place they can unload a passenger. Now, for picking up passengers, we have at times gone and drove them past them and had them walk to us to different locations. Because we, at the same time, we have to think about the safety of the bus and the passengers on the bus. At the same time, thinking of their safety just on the side of the road. Yeah. But it is a heavy traveled area of pedestrian public transportation.
For the westbound stop, did you look at, and I'm sure you probably did, farther down in between the two churches, that second church that you talked about, and you still felt like this was going to be a closer to the line was the better option?
For this area, yes. But we do have a stop at the post office farther down the road.
Okay.
We do have a stop at the post office. So that helps with that church and that food pantry down there.
I understand.
So that helps. But like I said, with this up here, when we're driving, there are some elderly who also do live up there, and they've already made their way this far down to the road, to 250 to catch the bus, and it's okay. And there have been some times where it's like we just don't feel like comfortable letting them off, and we've kind of convinced them to ride up to Augusta Health to transfer to the other bus coming the opposite direction. You know, we try to make it work the best we can, but it is becoming a heavier and heavier traffic area. And the church here, it's a brand new church. Well, the church was there, but it's under new ownership and leadership. And they're changing their name, and they're reaching out to make more contact with the public. You know, so reaching out to us, it's like, okay, it's
so,
a plus.
Yeah. On that note, so it was Neighbor Bridge that put in the request. They do operate a food pantry out of the Fishersville Community Church. And Tricia was unable to make it, so I'm going to give you a few points about what the Neighbor Bridge does. The little grocery serves anywhere from 50 to 75 families each Wednesday. And their Neighbor's Closet serves about 50 families every second and fourth Wednesday. So they meet people throughout the week for workforce development, clothing needs, and work with Network to Work and other social agencies with their clients. And lastly, transportation is a continuous issue for their clients, and having a bus option at our facility will help us work with those riders more specifically on their options.
So their request is for a permanent stop.
Yes.
And right now you're just doing a flag day.
Right.
It just seems like there's a lot of safety concerns to me to make it permanent.
I was going to say,
is there pros and cons?
I would want to kind of open up the floor. So the stop that's on the side of the church, which is on the same side of the road as Food Lion, that is already a pretty safe, consistent stop for Leroy to stop at, because there's a turn lane, so they can stop right before the turn lane. So adding a fixed stop on that side of the street wouldn't be a safety concern. It's the other side of the street, so I didn't know. I kind of wanted to open the floor up to you all to see how you felt about just putting a fixed sign on one side of the street, like we've done at Imperial Drive, if you remember, because it's kind of the same scenario. That other side of the street has no real safe location for the bus to pull off. And then, so we'd have a fixed stop on the side of the street where the church and Food Lion are, and then maybe not sign the other side of the street for now until maybe some more pedestrian improvements come online or anything of that nature. But like Leroy said, for those traveling that need to cross the street, they tell them, a safer option is for you to keep on the bus, do a connection, and come back on the other side of the street.
Leroy, and Muriel, do you see folks standing on the other side of the road even though there isn't a stop there?
Yes.
That was my concern.
What if they do the connection and cost them another 50 cents?
Oh. No, we wouldn't do that today.
Okay.
No.
All
right. What's the difference in time if they were to ride out to Augusta and then connect back? How much longer is it going to make their trip?
It's about 10-15 minutes.
Yeah. What about return trips? So if you're riding eastbound and the stop is now across the road, would they be required to ride into Waynesboro and back out?
We can't require them to do that. We'd recommend them to do so.
Would you find a safe spot for
yes.
them to get some more?
Right.
The safest.
So if the sign was, there's no sign on the
right, no sign
now. Line sign. Yeah. So if there's a sign there, that might make people, other drivers, more aware that this is a place that the bus is going to stop.
Yeah,
it would make drivers aware, but it also make passengers aware, so they'd be congregating at the same spot. So like Leroy said, he doesn't kind of have to pick and choose where people are standing. So it would give like a central location, for both passengers and drivers, and the bus driver would know that there's just a fixed stop for them to stop.
A fixed stop sign would also draw attention from vehicular traffic, so people just driving up the road be aware, like there's a sign there, and the bus will be stopping here when they drive by.
That's what I was
thinking. It'll draw their attention, versus not knowing if the bus is going to stop. You know, like we're in a school bus type phase where it's like, are we going to stop here or are we going to stop there?
And you said drivers judging whether or not it's not predictable to other drivers, which puts the bus and the driver in danger, and also any pedestrians getting off.
Yes.
And people are already impatient.
Yes.
Like without a stop sign. So
I think it's also helpful for the guests on the Neighbor Road when it's not, when it's a set stop, they can, it's clearly marked on what time it's going to be stopping. So, for instance, Neighbor Road is open from 5 to 8 p.m. approximately on Wednesday night. They know what time to get, you know, they need to plan their route accordingly. And to get there, get home, or get from to work or wherever. So I do think it is helpful from a passenger perspective as well to have it marked as a fixed stop on the route maps for planning for people who do have those barriers.
When we add stops like this along the way, what is the consideration for accessibility? Is there an accessibility consideration when we add stops like along the road? We know there's not really sidewalks along there. Obviously, new construction, we would have to be ADA compliant and accessible. But what is there a consideration when we do a stop like this?
And that's the nature of the beast with public transportation. We have to take accessibility into consideration with every stop, no matter where it is or how it is located. Because it could be someone as simple as just with a cane. We'd have to like, okay, this bus stop is not adequate for someone who has a walker. We can drop you off like a couple yards farther the road. It's safer for you to get off. Or if we need to unload the ramp on the bus, we have to take accessibility at every location, every stop.
Okay. So that is a factor that you all consider like on a case-by-case basis when you...
Every stop, every day.
I can't see deploying the ramp on that gravel lot that's, you know...
Oh, we would definitely move to like a driveway, or if need be, we would pull it to a parking lot. It's like we have to like really consider the safest place because one, the driver has to get off the bus also to open the ramp and help the passenger off.
Yes, well, your driver needs to be safe as well.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to have them like hop out in the middle of busy traffic, you know.
Right,
so yes,
we'll
take every stop. Yes.
Thank you.
So do you need a motion?
I was going to say, so it sounds like the consensus is to definitely just sign the one side of the street and then reevaluate that other side as more development comes online and maybe more infrastructure comes online. And we'll have, we can also make tailored signs for the Neighbor Bridge saying like the stop comes at this time, but if you're traveling the opposite direction, here are the directions on how to like keep the transfer as safe as possible. So is that what I'm, consensus that I'm hearing? Okay, so that would be the motion then is the, however that's gonna.
I'll move on that.
Move on that.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Second. Any further discussion?
Is it appropriate to, as part of that, encourage Augusta County to consider pedestrian improvements at this intersection? Is that something that
I mean, I can touch base on that too.
Okay.
Just to see if there is anything in the queue for this, and it's just not risen to the top at this point in time.
I don't think there's anything formally in the queue, but we have talked at the MPO meetings about a potential small segment study that Augusta County is interested in that would be for essentially kind of from here to the library along that stretch, but there's been nothing defined as far as whether the MPO would do that, the county would do that, a timeline, but it's definitely a need that the county is aware of from the participation in the MPO meetings, but nothing on the books that I know of.
is it helpful then to have that language come from this group, or does it matter?
I think support is always helpful. It's just a VDOT thing, too.
Oh, yeah.
So getting it to their ears.
Right. And well, that's what I'm wondering.
There is some proposed construction coming at the intersection into the Wilson complex. That's imminent, I think. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what changes that's going to have. It's a little bit further down the road, but
yeah, it'll have improvements there, but they're pretty much finite to that mm-hmm. intersection, and that's probably been what, decade in the making.
At least that's done.
Okay, well, perfect. Well, we'll get that sign going and.
Oh, a vote.
We want to vote.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Any further discussion then? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Thank you all.
Okay, so now I can say I'll go ahead and get one sign made and we'll touch base with. Trisha about the stop, and we'll work with them on putting that online. So thank you. Leroy, do you have any other updates you want to give?
No.
You want to pass you?
Oh. Well, at this point in time, as of, let's see, a week and a half now, we have been fully functional with Passio. Drivers only have paper in case of emergency. All drivers are now fully trained on the tablet. Any drivers who aren't fully trained are the ones who we're just bringing on board now, and they will be fully trained by the time they're solo behind the wheel. And that Fastio is functioning as it should. We're grateful for that, and we're learning new ways to use it, and Fastio is sending good updates that are giving us new tools to use. Like now we can actually see what the driver sees on their side of the tablet while they're driving, while they're operating the bus. We can actually see from here in the office now. So Fastio's been grateful, they've been helpful, they've been quick to respond to us for any issues. And anything they've never heard of before, they want to hear as much details as we can give them. So even the smallest detail the drivers may think is inconsequential, we get those drivers to tell us exactly, pinpoint every little thing, even if it's one little light that's out on the screen or like a glitch or a screen flashes, and they're right on it. And some problems are easy fix, some like we'll send you an update in a few days. But they're definitely on it, and the drivers are we're using it as they should, and it's working out pretty good.
Thank you for that update. Mm-hmm. Glad to hear things are going well. So moving on to future outlook, Paula, do you have something to share?
I do. So we are approaching budget season and grant season. I'm sure everybody is starting to feel that. So I wanted to give a quick update on what the future of the funding and our next couple of years of what Bright Transit operations will look like, just to get things in your head, start thinking about questions or ideas before we get really into the thick of developing these plans. But our turnkey contract with Virginia Regional Transit will expire June 30th, 2026. So we are required to do a full competitive procurement to re-procure a contract provider. Now that could be them as well, but it is an open procurement. So that's a pretty big undertaking to put that RFP out for a multi-million dollar contract. So the CSPDC has started that process now, and we are seeking proposals from different consultants to help us with some technical support for that. So what'll happen now is once we receive some proposals back from some firms, November 25th, I think, is the date they're due, we'll select a consultant to help guide us through that entire procurement process. That would include looking at the current state of our operations, the routes that we have, what we need to be able to deliver those routes as far as what types of vehicles, how many vehicles, what potential future needs we might have based on what's in our strategic plan, and we'll come up with those parameters, the contract terms, what are some of the best practices out there. You know, it's been 2017 is the last time we wrote this contract, so a lot has changed since then. So finding out what the best way to proceed with writing that contract and RFP will be, and then also having some assistance from that consultant on evaluation criteria and making sure that the RFP and the resulting contract are completely federally compliant. So that's a big undertaking that we'll be working on. And
microtransit feeds right into that, so that was a good tee up for our next presentation, is that if we do proceed with any kind of alternative transportation that's contrary or in addition to what we currently have, that would all feed into what we would need to know to draft that contract for the next 5-10 years, however long. That also brings up just some general awareness that the costs that we are currently seeing to operate transit are going up year in year, and we have been somewhat buffered to those costs because we've already had a contract underway that had specifically negotiated rates. So once that contract expires, we can feel fairly confident that whatever the result of our procurement is, the contract rate will likely increase. I don't want to say significantly, but it will be more than what we've typically seen on a year-to-year basis in the past couple of years. So we want to get out ahead of that and make sure that everyone knows that that is coming down the line. That would probably affect budget year FY27 for funding partners. And we will be looking at all types of alternative, you know, arrangements if it gets to a point where we have to say, okay, this funding, you know, we need to come up with some ideas. We want to make sure that we come to the table with a lot of different options, including microtransit, changes to routes, you know, service changes and whatnot, to make sure that we're not overburdening any of our funding partners. Also along that note, and I might kick it to Kyle if anyone has any questions, but at the state level, there is kind of a fiscal cliff approaching when it comes to state funding for transit systems, particularly rural systems. Essentially, the pot of money stays the same that the state gets from the federal government, and there are more agencies coming in for that same pot of funds. So in order to make sure that DRPT can still provide service to all transit agencies across the state, they're looking internally at all the options they have to still be able to deliver that support and service. But it may not be at the same level that we've been accustomed to. So there's nothing that's been determined at this point, but we want to put that on the horizon as well. Those things will probably happen around the same time, so it may compound the effect of both factors, and we'll be, you know, reaching out to each of our funding partners between now and then for sure to have one-on-one conversations and to keep you guys in the loop about what that looks like. So no reason to panic now, but we want to make sure that you know what's on the horizon and can be thinking about creative ideas internally if you, you know, have interest in different, just in different ways that we operate within your localities. Keep those things in mind, just so that when we have to have those conversations, we can come up with a lot of different solutions to choose from. And microtransit may be one of those solutions. You know, we are looking at this study from a number of different perspectives, and Tyler will get into all of that during the presentation, but in some places, microtransit has been used to supplement existing routes to add first and last mile connections, and then some places it may have been used to replace fixed routes that were, you know, running buses on long headways with only one or two passengers on them and was able to serve more riders in the same amount of time. So we're looking at all the possible ways that that could play into our system and hope to have all of those solutions as options when we get to the financial conversation in a couple of years. Any questions right away for that? All right. Do you have anything you want to add, Kyle?
No, I mean, you did a great job, Paul, just kind of summarizing. I think the state's perspective is that we're certainly trying to keep all of our funding partners whole. And so we're trying to find some creative solutions on how we can, you know, move state funds to maybe replace some federal funds so that we can free up those for our funding partners. So we're trying everything we can at the state to, you know, move things around and be more creative. So that's, you know, in the works. And our intention, like I said, is just to keep you all whole. So I know we have a workshop that's planned in December here in Stanton. So we'll be talking more with our 5311 partners at that workshop and just kind of hearing more feedback, and hopefully we can come up with some solutions here soon.
Great. Any questions for Paul or Bob? Great. Thank you all. All right, so now we're going to turn it over to the microtransit feasibility study kickoff to Tyler.
All right, I'm going to try getting the screen share. Do you all have that on your end of the room?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Well, hi, everyone. I'm glad to be with you today virtually. My name is Tyler Madoon again. I'm the project manager with Kinley Warren. We're the consultant team that's supporting this Bright Microtransit feasibility study. Kinley Warren, we're a planning and design firm and have an on-call contract with the CSPDC. So we've been supporting the PDC and Bright a number of different things over the past few years. So we're familiar with your system and excited to be working with you all again. We've also helped other transit agencies through similar feasibility studies across Virginia and across the country. So we're also happy to kind of bring those lessons learned and experience in working with other agencies implement this type of service. I've got with me Poonam and Sadie, who you heard from on their introductions earlier. Today we're going to be providing you all with some background on the study, how we got here. We'll talk a bit about what microtransit is and provide some examples, and share an overview of what we plan to accomplish during the study. We also want to hear from you all today, so we have a few discussion questions towards the end. Things like, where do you see the greatest transportation needs? What specific goals would you like to see achieved with this type of service? And then we'll wrap up with any other input or questions you may have. I do just want to do a sound check. Is everything in the room coming across clearly, audio-wise? Okay. It is a bit hard to hear on the far side of the room when we get to like some of the input and feedback. So Devin or someone closer to the mic, I may have you kind of repeat questions or things like that, or possibly take notes if you can in the room in case we miss anything. All right, Poonam, I'll pass to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just wanted to give you a little context on where this project stemmed from. So as I'm sure y'all are aware, your transit development plan, your TDP, was adopted in 2022. There was mention of the microtransit being a potential suitable option for Bright and should be explored a little further. So the recommendation specifically said that a microtransit feasibility study should be conducted in fiscal year 2025 and that implementation should occur in 2026. So with that in mind, the TDP gave some general guidelines or some ideas based off of the data analysis that occurred in that plan, that microtransit could be a suitable option for expanding the current fixed route network, providing an option for first mile or last mile connectivity, or serving new areas. Some of those areas that they mentioned, which will be considered but are not all-inclusive, are areas in Staunton, Waynesboro, and Fishersville that are not served by the Bright bus, and other areas that have the potential for providing a local match. So we are taking in this information that the TDP recommended and going to use that in our feasibility study to identify potential service areas and a service delivery model. So just for some context, I'm sure some of y'all are familiar with microtransit, but here are the five key characteristics of microtransit. So this is a service that's on demand, so someone can schedule a ride and shortly after that be picked up instead of having to request a ride ahead of time, like you would have to potentially do with paratransit or a dial-a-ride, which has been more common in some rural areas. The service is also technology enabled. So microtransit kind of hit the market pretty hot because it allowed people to book a ride through a mobile application. So it was more accessible to people like Uber and Lyft was. And then from the app, you'd also have some other functionality like being able to see how far away the vehicle is and being able to maybe communicate with your driver to coordinate on pickup time or pickup location. The service is also flexible in terms of routing, so you can get picked up by the driver, and then the route can adjust slightly as additional riders are being picked up. So while maintaining an efficient trip, the service is usually within a specific geographic zone. So pickup and drop off happen within a certain defined area and can also take you to key destinations like a transit center or a shopping center right outside of the zone. Lastly, as microtransit is usually a shared ride. So you can maybe get picked up at your origin and then along your way to your destination, the vehicle could pick up additional passengers that may be headed in a similar direction as you. So I'll kind of walk you through like what a typical microtransit trip would look like. So you would start by downloading the app, setting up your account, and then requesting a ride. Once you request the ride, that information goes into the software platform, and there's dynamic routing that occurs to figure out which vehicle should be assigned to you, and then the vehicle will go and pick you up at your location or near your location, and then along the way to your destination, there might be additional ride matches that occur where additional passengers can be picked up, but you will still arrive at your destination or near your destination within a reasonable and efficient amount of time.
I just wanted to add as well, in addition to the app, which is kind of the technology aspect, all services still allow the call-in option. So there's multiple booking options that are often offered just to give options to customers who might not be as technology savvy or who may just prefer the call-in option as well. So that's always on the table.
And then we just wanted to touch on some of the microtransit services that have been implemented in the region. So all of these different services kind of span different land uses. There are more like rural areas, more suburban, even getting closer to the urban areas. And they all have different service objectives. And some of these service objectives might align with Bright's service objectives as we progress through this study. So some examples are when ready started their microtransit service because they wanted to help people avoid long walks to the bus, waiting for the bus and having to transfer and spend a longer travel time to get to their destination. They also used microtransit as a way to replace some of their local bus routes. MicroCat, which is in Charlottesville, they wanted to mitigate some of the transit deserts that they had in more rural areas and serve areas that were not served by their local bus and provide a convenient alternative to ride-sharing companies like Uber and Lyft. There's also Ride on Flex, which is in Montgomery County. So this is more of the leading into the urban area. So they wanted to provide a service that would feed into their higher capacity transit service, like the Metro Rail stations that are in the county. And Metco, they specifically wanted to improve service efficiency and rider experience in rural areas. You can also see that all of these, we highlighted the vehicles of the microtransit service, because you can see that there's WinReady and GRTC Link that have these large vehicles, but then you can also have smaller ones like minivans or sedans, or there's depending on your needs, there's a variety of different vehicle options.
All right, so I just want to hit on quickly now the different aspects that we'll be looking at as we go through this study. So we kicked off the study 2 weeks ago. I'm in a data gathering and input phase. So this meeting today will be helpful as we identify needs and set some goals for this potential new service. In working with other agencies, we found that deploying this type of service should really be done to address very specific needs and goals. We don't just want to put something out there because it's new and interesting and others are doing it. We want to make sure as we go through this that we're identifying you know, the right cases for this, that it is the right solution to whatever transportation need there may be. So we're being very mindful of that. We also are underway right now with identifying what we're calling opportunity zones. So these are areas of Mercer County, Stanton, and Waynesboro that are most suitable for supporting this type of service. So we're analyzing census and travel data, looking at population and employment, as well as the current bus system, the fixed routes and paratransit to identify any gaps. Microtransit is kind of interesting in that we're trying to find a sweet spot that you have enough demand and density to effectively support a public transportation service, but not too dense to overwhelm the service with more trip requests than it can handle. So, for example, in more urban areas where there's greater demand and density, running a bus route may still be the best option. So we're kind of looking at all the different areas the Bright service area and kind of beyond where the routes and paratransit serve today to see where these kind of suitable conditions exist. We'll also, as Paula mentioned, the kind of service delivery model or contract approach is really important. So we'll evaluate different options here. You know, some agencies who operate in-house, which we know you all don't, may procure the technology separately from the operations. So there's a few different approaches, whether that's part of the turnkey service or kind of separately procuring that technology that's needed, that we'll look at as we go through the study. And then we'll wrap up after we prioritize those different suitable areas, kind of defining a service plan. So where this could run, what hours, what the fare would be, different marketing and customer engagement strategies. We'll estimate ridership and costs for it and present that all in the final study. So we're here in November meeting with you all. In December, we're planning to get through that opportunity zones, a lot of that data analysis step. By the spring, around March, we'll have the different service model and plan developed and re-engage with you all on those draft recommendations before completing the study by May of next year. So I'll pause here to see if there's any kind of questions so far over what we've gone over before we get into some further discussion. I've got a few prompts, but just wanted to pause if there's any just general questions about the study, what we're considering, or anything we've presented. If not, I will move on to this next one. So as I mentioned, we do want to really understand kind of the needs and challenges you all are seeing and find where this tool kind of best fits in the service area. So we got a few discussion prompts here. I'll read them out, but I think you can just all take a moment to kind of think how you'd respond to these, and then I'll open it up and hopefully hear from some folks on their thoughts on this. So first, we want to know where you're seeing the most unmet transportation needs and challenges. We want to know which areas or populations you feel need better or more tailored service. And then if there's any specific goals you'd like to see achieved with this type of service. That could be greater coverage, more connectivity, a better frequency or flexibility, cost efficiency is a few examples. So I'll open it up. You all can kind of share any thoughts you have on any of these topics here.
So for Augusta, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So for Augusta, we're 967 square miles. So in my lifetime, there will not be a service going everywhere in Augusta County. But we do have pockets that would have a more dense population that could possibly serve that are peripheral to the two cities. We're working through a comp plan and Greenville came up. Right now we're running to Stewart's Draft out of Waynesboro. Greenville would be just hopping down the road a little bit more to a population center. At Cremora, brought us, some of those areas may be serviced using this, where you can get people in that triangular pattern that you were showing there, as far as if you need to go to a grocery store, there's going to be one that's in a reasonable distance. You don't have to go to Walmart in Stanton or Waynesboro. So I think that's something to consider. Also, I think you had an example with one of those where they took a fixed route and made it microtransit. Mm-hmm. The Stewart's Draft route may be that. I think we only have, 11 or 12 riders a day. So they could possibly utilize this instead of having the bus travel back and forth.
Okay. Yeah, definitely an option to when there's more, shorter trips or, destinations within a community. This tends to work well. Less well, I'd say, for longer kind of cross-county trips where there's kind of a need to expand travel within a smaller geography. Yeah, this could definitely be a good solution.
I think for social services, I work with the Employment Service Program. And something that will work better for people who are employed, it's hard for them to get to the bus stop at a certain time, then they end up late for work, so more of an on-demand service would serve their needs a whole lot better. And I would like to see all those things, greater coverage, connectivity, frequency, flexibility. I'd like to see all of that, please. But I will not be here. But.
You can't retire. You want all that, you got to stick around.
Would some of the smaller vehicles, the vans or even the SUVs or something, would they be wheelchair accessible?
Yeah, typically that's what we see is all vehicles in the fleet are wheelchair accessible as well, just to provide that equivalent level of service and response time for those passengers.
So what's the crosswalk between paratransit and microtransit? Can it be one and the same? Can microtransit serve as a paratransit? What's that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it is similar in that it's on demand. The key differences are microtransit is generally open to the general public, so there isn't an eligibility requirement to use the service. Okay. There could be, though. I mean, some agencies have used this for certain populations, but more commonly it's open to anyone who wants to use it. You don't have to pre-register or have any other screening with the agency to be able to use the service. The other key difference is, Boonham said it's more real time, so you can theoretically get a ride within 15 to 30 minutes from the time you put in the request versus many paratransit services require a day in advance notice to schedule that trip.
I was going to add one more component of paratransit is that sometimes they provide door-to-door service where there's assistance by the operator to help the passenger get out of the vehicle versus that's not usually an option. That's usually not part of microtransit. It would be more dropping you off either at or near your destination.
And that would need to be, a policy decision. So, for riders that do need assistance, in some cases that they could be that door-to-door, but Boonham's right, and that in general it's more of a curb-to-curb type service rather than full assistance to the door.
For the group, could you explain the difference between microtransit and demand response?
Yeah, it's very similar to that. I guess the demand response, true demand response service is often also open to the general public. There could be, again, certain programs that different populations are eligible for. But I guess the key difference is kind of that use of the technology. I've kind of viewed it as a more modern version of kind of traditional demand response where you have more booking options. So you can book by the app, by calling in on the website, versus just kind of traditional dial-a-ride service where you only have the call-in option.
What considerations would there be regarding microtransit service for those populations in our community that don't have access to smartphone apps?
Yeah, so that's definitely will be an important consideration as we going through this. And as I said earlier, typically, and we probably require this given what we know about this service, is that there is always multiple options to book. So you do have that call-in option that still gets you that, you know, real-time response to that trip request, in addition to some of the more technology-enabled booking options. So we'll definitely be mindful of the different kind of customers that are currently served today or that could be served in the future and their needs, and provide various options that align with those.
What considerations might be for those that have a scheduled medical appointment in the future?
That's also a good question. That's a parameter that the software often allows, and also kind of a service design decision we'll need to make. So you can pre-schedule trips in advance. So let's say you know you have an appointment coming up next week, even though it's, you know, you don't want to wait until that day of to book that. That is an option to pre-schedule that trip in advance. There's also some of the software providers have the option to schedule kind of recurring trips. So let's say you know you want to use this to get to work Monday through Friday, you can have a standing trip request so you don't have to do that every single day. Again, that's all very customizable, and it's going to kind of vary based on the software and scheduling software that's selected, but there are options in the market that allow for those pre-scheduled trips and those recurring trips in addition to the real-time booking.
Does the new Passio system that was invested in this year, does it have that capability?
Was that the question about the Passio system?
Yes.
Evan?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Passio system that you all have is more focused on the operations side. So collecting data on where the vehicle is, passenger counts on and off, communication with dispatch. So it's more kind of behind the scenes to support the service. This would be a little bit different. And Passio does not offer a microtransit solution right now. They're more of a traveler information and operations data type vendor. So this would be similar, but would be a different supplier than Passio.
So are there instances where I'm assuming that in all cases where this is happening, that the software provider for the scheduling system is not the service provider of the transit, that they're separate entities. And are the, in that case, like, I guess I'm just curious of the different models, and this is probably something that will be addressed in what you're working on, so I'm probably getting ahead of things, but where the private for-profit companies and vendors are involved versus public agencies versus transit providers and those contracts, and how those relationships are working. And I guess partly it's out of concern that I think, for instance, about the bike sharing programs and the private company Alta that was doing those, that then sort of shut down fairly suddenly and left everybody in the lurch. And I'm just a little concerned about that sort of scenario with these types of things. And so I'm just curious, like, how many different software providers are we talking about that are doing this kind of thing, and what is their relationship with the transit providers themselves and the MPOs and all of that. So, like I said, it's probably getting ahead of things a little bit. But.
Those are great questions, though. So I kind of heard, you know, what's the state of kind of software vendors out there? Are there many? And kind of what are some of the considerations when, like, selecting a service delivery model? Whether that's, you know, all kind of turnkey, that operators also acquiring the technology versus models where maybe the agency is operating the service but contracting out for the technology. So yeah, those are all decision points that we'll need to get into as we go through this. On the technology piece, and I'll pass it to Poonam to see if she's got any thoughts. There are, say, a couple of very well-established vendors out there that seem to be more popular than others. There's, but that's probably 5 to 10 is kind of the range of that technology and scheduling. Vendors that are out there in the marketplace, several of those have been around for many years and are used by many agencies. But Poonam, any thoughts you have on kind of the different models that we'll be looking at or that we've looked at with other agencies?
Yeah, I kind of like to think of it as like a spectrum. So on one end, you've got, you know, the agency is doing everything in-house, aside from having a technology provider give you the software. And then on the other hand, you've got a contractor doing everything. So customer service, vehicles, operators, technology. We've seen, like, you know, on either end, some of the things that the agencies in the past have considered is, do they have vehicles in-house that they could repurpose? Do they, like, currently contract out their operators? Is there staff capacity? And sometimes something that another agency has considered is, well, maybe we'll consider doing, you know, turnkey for the interim to see if, you know, microtransit is a suitable option for our agency, and then maybe more in permanent service, if it is a good option, we would consider taking some more of our operations in-house.
Thanks.
Jennifer, I know you mentioned Greenville, Cremora, and Grottoes. Did Jolly View come up too? I know it's like just slightly outside of Stanton city limits.
Not specifically, because the meeting wasn't held close to that area. But I could see, like, throughout the county there would be ways to expand just outside of the cities a little bit, or even the Verona-Fishersville corridor, and triangulate, you know, back to where you need to be. Like, Weir's Cave, you can get to Grottoes to the food line. Mm-hmm. Greenville, you can get to Sturge Draft, that type of thing.
And then Stanton and Waynesboro, are there any pockets that you see that could use some additional service outside of where Bright currently goes, or?
So, and it might be like more like a permanent stop type request in the future, where we do have some new low-income housing tax credit projects that we envision that aren't within a far distance from stops, but maybe that's a possibility that I can see.
Stanton?
I mean, now that we have service out at Middlebrook, I think that was our biggest concern, and so we're really grateful to have that service out there now. I don't know, Rodney, have you heard anything in other areas of Stanton?
I haven't, and right now that's where we're getting the higher density, the multifamily developments. We have several right there, 130 at Middlebrook Trace, mm-hmm. that are two-thirds of that's completed. And then you referenced Lily Gardens, first 50 units, they applied for a site plan, and that was contingent upon having a bus stop there. They were not going to submit a site plan until we had that in place. But they have another 50 units they're looking at. Stanton Apartments, 72 units are being developed right now, all in that same area. And that we've talked about, you know, having a permanent stop and also maybe going up to Seth Drive to pick up some of those and be a little bit closer to that, some of those developments. I don't know if that would be part of this, though. I think that may be
more of a regular round.
Yes.
On Augusta Health, are there any clinics that you all have, any service, or any populations that you've heard from that kind of have difficulty accessing?
So we just hear from increasingly from our aging population, especially those that are you know, that don't have family, friends, community support to get them to doctor's offices. So I think and to the hospital in general.
for appointments. So what I really like about this is the availability to call Foot One Demand to do pickup. You know, because sometimes they can get somebody to drop them off or somebody to pick them up, but maybe not one or the other, or the reverse. Then it can become a challenge when they don't know when an appointment may end to schedule that ahead of time, then out sitting there for, you know, a good number of hours ahead. So I think this could be a very good solution for some of our folks in the community, our aging population, who don't have either family that can provide the transportation for whatever reason that is, and those folks can't drive themselves in the situation or don't have their own transportation and live in a more rural community.
We have sort of the same need with the Blue Ridge student population. We have many students that utilize the regular bus stop, bright bus routes, but we end up with students that don't pay attention to what time the last bus comes and get stranded on campus. And so many of those students, our only option sometimes is to call county and ask them, please, can you come give this student a courtesy ride? And depending on what the mood is, sometimes they can and sometimes they can't. But getting an Uber at 10 o'clock at night in Weir's Cave is next to impossible. So I definitely think that our students would use it at Blue Ridge for sure. I don't know what the volume would look like, but certainly at least a few times a month I get a call, we've got a student stuck here. So I think the on-demand aspect would be amazing for the Blue Ridge area.
All right, any other thoughts on needs or areas or anything like that?
I have a question just about the general setup of the system. So most softwares, when you set them up, the back end is so detailed that it's hard to change it once it's done. So with this type of program, if you were to roll out a microtransit system from Greenville to Sturtsdraft in that area, and you didn't really get a lot of demand, is it easy to switch it to another area that may need it? Like, is the software easy to set up or transfer?
Devin, could you repeat that? I think I heard is the software.
Yeah, like, so
if
like,
you need to switch areas.
Yeah, is it easy to switch up areas? So like, say we start with one area and then we see the demand is low. Is it easy to kind of switch that location point?
On the technical and technology side, yes, it's more of a consideration on the community and riders, not wanting to, take something or put something out just to take it away, to kind of give enough time for people to get familiar and used to the service and try riding it. So that technically, yes, it is a more adaptable, kind of flexible service to also deploy fairly quickly, but obviously need to be mindful of kind of how riders and the community and how we're kind of educating and involving them in the changes as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we've got, I think, one or two more here just to kind of wrap up. So we have been having some similar conversations to this with CSPDC at our kickoff and BRT as well, and have been gathering a lot of different needs. So we'll take what we heard and the notes that we get from today and kind of compare it. But we've kind of drafted some preliminary draft goals for this type of service. We started by looking at the TDP, Transit Development Plan, and the BRIGHT's mission and the service goals that were outlined there, as well as some of the needs that we're hearing as we get started with this project. So one is providing a convenient, reliable, and adaptive transit service. So this is kind of getting at the idea of having a reliable option for your travel needs and getting people to where they need to go faster. The second one is expanding transit connections and mobility options to serve underserved areas, increase access to essential destinations, and complement existing transit routes. So in this goal, that kind of gets to some of the additional underserved or more rural areas that we're hearing need connections into areas nearby or services. and potentially exploring, you know, areas that aren't currently served by the system today. And then lastly, we have prioritized financially sustainable strategies that support local economic development, improve the quality of life for residents, and maximize resource efficiencies. So this goal would be, you know, making sure we're making smart financial decisions, kind of looking at the effectiveness of this as a tool compared to, you know, other service options like bus or paratransit, kind of making sure we're looking at different financial options and making the best use of the resources that we have. So I'll pause there, see if there's any kind of final questions, thoughts, or reactions to anything we've presented, and then I'll just close with some of our next steps. All right, so as we go forward, we will take the input, as I said, that we got today, finalize those goals that'll help us better understand of the types of areas that we wanna look at a little bit more closer and prioritize. So we'll move through our analysis, looking at, you know, the census data, the travel data, starting to define some potential zones or areas where the service could make the most sense. We'll prioritize those. And then begin putting more details to it. So for the high priority locations, defining, you know, hours of service, fare, what potential ridership could look like, what it could cost. So we'll be moving through all those various steps of the analysis over the next few months. And then we'll come back to you all in the spring, right now targeting possibly the March meeting, to share those draft recommendations and get some additional feedback. All right. With that, I'll thank you all for your time. If you have additional thoughts or questions, certainly get in touch with Devin and Danielle, and we are in contact regularly, so would love to hear any additional, you know, questions, concerns, ideas you all have related to this topic.
Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you.
And Lady. Thank you, Tyler. We're excited to get the feasibility analysis underway. Moving on to other business, Danielle, did you want to tell us about announcement?
Yes, we are all signed up for the holiday parade. So the trolley will be at the Stanton Christmas parade December 2nd. It's a Monday. And then the bus will be at the Waynesboro Christmas parade the 7th of December. And then the Stewart's Draft parade the 14th, that next Saturday. So come down and see it.
Thank you for sharing that. Is there any other business for today? All right.
So it's not other business, but it's listed under adjournment. It should have been under other business. the calendar for 2025. We have the date slated for our usual second Wednesday of every other month starting in January. Just wanted to confirm that that still works for you and that the time of 2:30 continues to work. So those dates will be January 8th, March 12th, May 14th, July 9th, September 10th, and then November 12th, which is our usual annual meeting. I did want to call attention that Veterans Day falls the day before, so I wanted to make sure that wasn't going to be conflicting, or if you all wanted to move that one or just keep it on the books for that particular date. I know that's like a year in advance, so you can change your mind, but I just did want to call attention that a holiday would be a day before. So if you all like to take vacation around this time, let me know and we can go ahead and move it. Or if not, we can keep it and then we can always move it as time draws near.
I think before we get into the new year as well, if you haven't already let Devin and Danielle know who your main point of contact for the VTAC and who your alternates are, please let them know so that we can update that list before the first meeting in January.
So yeah, if you all are fine with that, then Danielle will go ahead and send out the calendar invites for the entire year. And also, before you go, each agency and organization gets a set of brochures because they came right off of the printer. So that's 2024's version. So each of the 9 organization partners. You can pick those up and go ahead and put them at your locations.
Thank you, Devin. I guess then we are adjourned at 2:30.